WGXC listeners. This is Kelly Ann McCon. Next up on WGXC is All Together Now, a local show of information, news, weather, interviews, reports, and more. Email info at WGXC.org to get involved with your creative community radio station.
This is Malcolm Ross of Orange Juice, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul's office released a report on May 5th showing how African Americans, women, and the disabled have it worse in New York's housing market. The Fair Housing Matters New York report found that a third of New Yorkers are living in segregated counties, and 95% of Black and African American residents in the state are living in a county that is highly segregated from white households. Only a third of Black and African American households own their own home, and only 25% of Hispanic and Latino households do, while overall, two-thirds of New York households own their own homes. The report also found that women and children were more likely to have higher rates of poverty, and households with a disabled member are more likely to be classified as low income. Hochul said, and I quote, "The findings in this report show that confronting these inequalities will require an aggressive, multifaceted approach. I look forward to working with our partners at the federal, state, and local levels to take a bold action necessary to foster more diverse communities and create and preserve affordable housing for more New Yorkers," end quote. Hochul's housing plan of building 800,000 new units was shot down by the state budget by Democrats in the legislature. Hochul and many officials in the Hudson Valley have identified an affordable housing crisis in the state. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. The Troy Record reports that New York State Senator Chuck Schumer said that a proposed rule change for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services could bring an estimated nearly $1 billion annually to upstate New York hospitals. Schumer said, and I quote, "For far too long, upstate New York hospitals have faced unfairly low Medicare payments and fell terribly short of wage demands, leaving hospitals struggling to compete to bring the best doctors and nurses to upstate New York. After years of fighting, though, the feds have finally shifted course and proposed a new rule that can help finally rectify the unfair payment system and give upstate New York the shot in the arm it has long needed to the tune of nearly $1 billion every single year," end quote. There have been numerous cutbacks at New York hospitals in recent years. Columbia Memorial in Hudson, for instance, no longer has birthing services for mothers. Schumer says the proposed rule change would bring more than $967 million in increased federal funding for hospital systems across upstate New York. Since the 1980s, hospitals in the Albany area have only received 86% of what the average hospital gets to account for wages. Columbia Memorial would get an extra $8,228,068 if the proposed rule change goes through. Read more about this story in the Troy Record. Sarah Rizzo reports for News 10 in Albany that Massachusetts has begun a redesign of the viewing area and parking lot at Bish Bash Falls, permanently blocking access to water at the bottom of the falls. The highest waterfall in Massachusetts was a popular destination during the COVID-19 pandemic, with visitors leaving lots of trash and swimming and picnicking where that is not allowed. The Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation said in a statement, and I quote, "To promote public safety, mitigate visitor impacts on the natural resource, and protect the rare and native habitat, access to the water was closed in July 2020 with the placement of barriers," end quote. The redesign will replace those barriers with more permanent barriers, but the DCR does not know when the work will be complete. Bish Bash Falls is along the Massachusetts border and can be accessed from Copeg in Columbia County, too. Copeg Town historian Howard Blue says Bish Bash Falls is the town's biggest attraction. Read more about this story at News 10 Albany. WNYT reports that with several more mass shootings across the country in the past week, the Grace Baptist Church of Troy announced it will raffle off an AR-15 gun or a flamethrower in July. The church announced the giveaway in a Facebook post. The church will give away the gun over the July 4th weekend. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was not amused by the announcement, saying,
"Well, first of all, I believe that AR-15s should be banned. I don't think they should be publicly available to civilians. It is a military-style weapon designed to kill large numbers of people very quickly, and not designed for hunting, not designed for enthusiasts. They're designed for war. So I think that's wrong. And as a person of faith, it's very disturbing to me personally that a church would be giving away weapons of war designed to kill large numbers of people very quickly."
Read more about this story at the WNYT website. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
When we have 200 mass shootings in less than 130 days, more than one a day, this is a crisis. Congress must do something about it.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said most Americans want common-sense gun laws. Following the recent mass shooting in Texas, President Biden is renewing calls for gun control. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said on Fox News Sunday, Texas lawmakers are working to address the anger and violence, which he said is the real problem. California Governor Gavin Newsom fired back at Abbott, who also mentioned the state with the largest number of gun violence victims this year was California, a state with stricter gun laws.
"We need to recognize a reality. What we've seen across the United States over the past year or two, and that is an increased number of shootings in both red states and blue states."
In a tweet, Newsom said Abbott conveniently did not mention Texas's gun death rate is 73% higher than California's. California has an A grade on the Giffords Law Center's annual scorecard and also ranks the highest of all 50 states for gun law strength. Texas received an F and ranked 30th for its laws. The Biden administration is working on new regulations that would require airlines to compensate passengers by covering meals and hotel rooms if they're stranded for reasons within the airline's control. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said airlines need to do their part.
"The FAA and Department of Transportation are doing our part, but airlines need to accept their fundamental responsibility to better serve passengers."
Election officials discussed threats and the harassment of poll workers during a symposium Monday. Connecticut Secretary of State Stephanie Thomas is optimistic about how elections in her state are handled.
"Everyone just thought an election happened and that there weren't people working all year. So to have a seat in demystifying that process, teaching people about civics is the root, the reason for my optimism."
South Carolina Senator Tim Scott hosted a town hall meeting with voters in Iowa about a month after he announced the formation of an exploratory committee for a possible 2024 presidential run. During the meeting, he called for accountability in healthcare spending. Artificial intelligence pioneer Jeffrey Hinton says AI could present a more urgent threat to humans than climate change during an appearance on CNN. This comes as President Biden held a recent meeting with CEOs of leading AI companies to discuss the safety of the products they're creating before releasing them to the public. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have three pro-democracy stories out of Delaware, Connecticut, and Oklahoma today, two proposing to expand voting options, and one just signed to protect poll workers from intimidation. First to Delaware, which last year passed a law to implement no-excuse absentee mail-in voting, only to have its state Supreme Court strike it down as unconstitutional. Delaware Public Media reports that Senate Bill 3 proposes to change the state constitution to remove currently required excuses for absentee voting. S3 passed the state Senate and now moves to a House committee. Connecticut is well on its way to expanding in-person early voting. One of only four states not offering some form of early voting, the Connecticut Mirror reports that bipartisan bill HB 5004 would add 14 days of early in-person voting for general elections, 7 days for state and local primaries, and 4 days for special elections and presidential primaries. It's expected to pass the Senate and be signed by Governor Ned Lamont. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt signed SB 481 May 1st, making it a misdemeanor to threaten, intimidate, or harass election workers, or to release their personal information. Doing so is punishable by up to 6 months in jail and up to a $1,000 fine. The bill also makes impersonating an election official subject to the same penalties. We have links to the bills, articles, and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
And now here is your WGXE weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 65 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 39 degrees. And on Wednesday, it will be sunny with a high near 69 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 44 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties. And now here is your WGXE weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 65 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 39 degrees. And on Wednesday, it will be sunny with a high near 69 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 44 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Richard Goldstein of Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
On Thursday, May 11th, turn out for a public information session for WGXC Community Contributors Program. If you want to be on the radio at WGXC, now is your chance. Turn out at 6 p.m. Thursday, May 11th at the Kinderhook Memorial Library for an information session and a chance to find out how to get on the air at 90.7 FM. The WGXC Community Contributors Program is created to bolster Wave Farm's mission of participatory radio. We're looking for volunteer producers, programmers, $10 and more to make segments to air in the primetime drive time hours on the station. It features reviews, stories, and more. If you'd like to interview local farmers or do restaurant reviews or have another idea for a short segment on the radio, please get in touch at content@wgxc.org or turn out May 11th at 6 p.m. Kinderhook Memorial Library for a public information session about the WGXC Community Contributors Program. Here's 2018 local music from Lady Moon and the Eclipse. The song is called Stargazing.
Stargazing. 90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
The Public News Service daily newscast for May the 9th, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. 3 weeks remain in the 2023 Texas legislative session with a bill under consideration that could ultimately throw out future election results in the state's most populated county.
Harris County, home of Houston and almost 5 million residents, is the target of two Senate bills that would eliminate the elections administrator position there and return all election duties to the county tax assessor collector and county clerk. It comes on the heels of SB 1 passed in 2021, which implemented new restrictions on voting by mail, a ban on drive-through voting, and empowered partisan poll watchers. Katya Erisman with Common Cause Texas describes the ongoing attacks on voting rights as death by a thousand cuts.
Instead of just create explicit barriers to the voters, they're trying to undo the systems of elections as we know it, which is terrifying when you look at historical precedents of the decline of democracy and how other countries have navigated this crisis.
During the 2022 midterm election, voting machines malfunctioned at several polling places in Harris County. SB 1750, proposed by Republican State Senator Paul Bettencourt, passed by a vote of 20-11. Bettencourt says voters should have confidence in their elections, and Harris County glitches in the last election eroded that confidence. I'm Roz Brown.
Harris County was a Republican stronghold as recently as 2014. Now from CNN, the man who drove a vehicle into a group of people near a migrant shelter in Brownsville, Texas, on Sunday, killing 8 and injuring 10 more, has been charged with 8 counts of manslaughter. They report the driver, identified as George Alvarez, he's 34 years old, and authorities say he has an extensive rap sheet, including prior charges of assault and driving while intoxicated. Meantime, legislation in Salem would extend food assistance to Oregonians in immigrant communities. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Federal law excludes people who are undocumented from programs such as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the country's largest food assistance plan. Aldo Solano with Oregon Food Bank is a DACA recipient and has personal experience with this exclusion. His parents were farm workers, and he says as a kid he found out about SNAP, so he told his mom about it.
I asked her, why don't we apply for this program that seems to be helping other people who are struggling to buy food? And my mom was like, well, Mikko, we can't do that because we don't have any papers, so we don't qualify for that type of assistance. That really painted, honestly, my entire worldview from there on forward.
The Food for All Oregonians bill would extend aid to lawful permanent residents, U.S. Compacts of Free Association citizens, and other Oregonians who arrive as immigrants or refugees.
This is Public News Service. Now to Ohio, where women earn on average 79 cents for every dollar a man earns. That's according to 2019 U.S. Census Bureau data analyzed by the National Women's Law Center.
Kent State University Associate Professor of Sociology Susan Fisk says women continue to juggle household and professional responsibilities.
Women are still the ones managing the mental load at home. You know, putting all that cognitive effort into sort of managing the household, they're still doing housework.
Nationally, in 2002, women working full and part-time earned 80% of what men earned. By 2022, that had risen to just 82%, according to the Pew Research Center. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
And now to California, a new report shows the number of young people aged 14 to 21 in the foster care system has dropped by about half, that over a 15-year period.
Researchers from the Annie E. Casey Foundation found that in the Golden State, the percentage of kids entering foster care due to neglect went from 26% in 2006 to 66% in 2021. Angela Vasquez with the Children's Partnership says, especially in a wealthy state such as California, neglect really means poverty.
We are pulling young people into a system that is not trauma-informed because they're families are poor and lack real access to the kinds of services they would need.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Data shows in 2020, about 26% of foster kids in California exited the system because they found a permanent home. 70% left when they became emancipated or aged out. Finally, our Mike Mullen reports for nearly two decades, a North Dakota county elected commissioners in a way that did not comply with a consent decree concerning Native American interests.
The Native American Rights Fund recently announced the pending agreement with Benson County. In 2000, a court order, spurred by a Department of Justice filing, said the county's choice of an at-large election process diminished the political power of Natives in the area. But in 2004, the county went back to that process. NARF attorney Michael Carter says recent census figures show Natives deserve greater representation.
The county had a majority Native American population. However, there was only one Native American serving on the board.
The group, which represented the Spirit Lake Tribe, contends the county's actions violated the Federal Voting Rights Act. The Benson County State's attorney calls the settlement a good result.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported. Here are some radio stations, big and small, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that last year's expansion of New York's so-called red flag law has caused a major increase in the number of firearms being seized by police from individuals found to be, and I quote, likely, end quote, at risk of harm to themselves or others. Last year, Governor Kathy Hochul signed an executive order issued expanding the 2019 law and mandated troopers file court applications for, and I quote, extreme risk protection orders, end quote, whenever they encounter a person who is believed to be a danger and in possession of a firearm. So while in 2020, judges issued just 255 protection orders against people across New York, in the first 4 months of this year, the number of individuals subjected to emergency or temporary risk protection orders is over 2,120. That has led to many gun seizures, too. Bo Duffy, a state police spokesperson, said, and I quote, in some troops, storage for seized guns was running short, but we have managed it by reconfiguring storage spaces to accommodate for the increased seizures, end quote. Some attorneys are arguing that the expansion of the red flag law is unfair because the state mental health law requires a physician to determine whether a person presents a, and I quote, likelihood to result in serious harm, end quote, while the red flag law has that decision made by police officers and prosecutors. Courts will ultimately decide that question. The governor's executive order came days after a mass shooting in Buffalo last year, in which 10 black people were killed by an 18-year-old white man in what police said was a racially motivated attack. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Raymond Pignon at Columbia Green Media rounds up some reaction to the $229 billion state budget that was passed over a month late in Albany last week. Democrat State Senator Michelle Hinchey said, and I quote, while this has been a difficult budget process, I'm proud of the historic wins we secured for the 41st District. Our final budget takes major steps forward to make life more affordable for New Yorkers, maintaining the lowest personal income tax rates for working families in over 70 years, and fully funding our public schools, end quote. And she specifically cited Columbia Green Community College, where more funding was secured and students will not pay increased tuition fees. Republican Representative Mark Molinaro of the 19th Congressional District disagreed, calling the budget a, and I quote, dumpster fire, end quote, that got bail reform wrong and made New York more unaffordable. Catskill Center for Conservation and Development Executive Director Jeff Centerman was happy with the budget, saying in a statement, and I quote, the budget includes funding for expanded visitor services at the Catskill Visitor Center, stewardship money to care for the Catskill Park, support of research and data collection across the region, and more. Both the national resources and the communities of our region will benefit by this increase in investment and by the increased attention being paid to our region, end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Greta Johnson reports in the Berkshire Eagle that the highest court in Massachusetts has ruled that speakers have the right to be rude in public comment at town meetings. State Supreme Judicial Court ruled in March that public comment cannot be stopped even if the comments are, and I quote, rude, disrespectful, or personal speech about government officials or government actions, end quote. The American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts called the ruling a, and I quote, victory for free speech rights and core democratic principles, end quote. Pittsfield City Council President Peter Marchetti was not so enthusiastic, saying, and I quote, I think it's okay to voice opposition to a decision that's made, but when we revert to name-calling of councilors or department heads, I think that's a bit overboard, end quote. Public comment is not required under the state's open meeting law, and North Adams City Council President Lisa Blackmer is considering eliminating it from meetings altogether. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Chocolate pigs are awesome.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Did you hear that?
No.
Hi, everybody. This is Timmy Whippoorwill calling to you live from inside the oak tree. Please give what you can to WGXC.org/donate. Check it out. Their webpage is live, it's fresh, it's exciting and new. Even us here in the Whippoorwill community approve of such a place. WGXC is here for you, so why don't you be there for them?
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune into Transmission Art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
On Sunday, my mom and I go to Quaker meeting. I sit with my mom for 10 minutes, and then I go upstairs for first day school. One person at our meeting is John Amadon. Not only is he a Quaker, but he was in the Marines during the Vietnam War, and now he works for peace. We talk to him for first day school, but I wanted to interview him and find out more. How did you end up in war?
How did I end up in war?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I was in the Marine Corps and actually put in for orders in 1966 at some time. The Marine Corps sent me to Okinawa, so I very fortunately avoided war.
How did you survive it?
You know, you just do what's in front of you, basically. I mean, Okinawa was considered the party island, actually. You know, the military honestly runs on a lot of cheap alcohol, and they provide it to you, so we drank a lot. And I worked in a forklift parts room, and we provided support. And I didn't do a lot of anything, really, honestly, there for 4 years, yeah.
Where did you travel during the Vietnam while you were a Marine?
I was in Parris Island in South Carolina where there was boot camp, and then I was up in the Camp Lejeune area for infantry training and supply administration school. Yeah, that's where they had the poison water they were allowing everybody to drink for many, many years. Literally, the wells were poisonous, and they knew about it, and allowed people to drink. And now there's this huge settlement going on, and it affected people with a variety of different diseases. So don't join the military, folks, or you'll be drinking poison water before you know it.
Do you want to join the military, Nico?
No? And then I was in Yuma, Arizona, in the Marine Corps Air Squadron. And then I went to Santa Ana, El Toro for a language school for a brief bit of time and ended up volunteering, putting in for orders and got sent to Okinawa.
And after that, how did you stop and become a Quaker?
Well, the road to becoming a Quaker was a long and winding road, as the expression goes. And I went through a variety of different churches and studied with different groups at different times. So at one point in my life, I was a medium in basically a spiritualist church, but was considered a Christian metaphysical church. I spent 8 years studying with and then teaching at the Hindu temple and taught kids Hindu heritage classes. And we did their scripture, the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, the Ramayana, and others. And then I was here, with the Quakers beforehand, and then took 8 years to return to the Quakers.
How do you be a Quaker each day?
You know, I think you can be a Quaker in many different ways each day, but I don't necessarily think of being a Quaker each day. I mean, I think, kind words. But all of humanity does that, or ought to be doing that, because there's a proverb that goes, kind words are like honey. You can, there are tests for life. And one very simple one given to me by a local woman was, and I quite liked, was ask yourself, have you helped somebody today? I thought that was really an excellent test. There was another one that was quite unusual, which was the student goes to the master and says, how do I know when a person is truly grown up? And the answer in this case was, when you no longer have to lie to that person about anything. And that was kind of amusing in one sense, but interesting observation in another.
How do you help people with using your kind words?
Well, you know, when you say something kind to an individual, it usually makes them feel better about themselves, and it makes you feel better about you too, yourself. So you want to help people feel better about themselves, because most of us are just kind of muddling our way through life and not really sure what the hell we're doing.
Got you to the meeting house. How did you hear about this?
I don't know. I don't remember, honestly. I think it was here, and it said Quaker meeting, and I thought at a certain point in time when, you know, like, when I was no longer welcomed at my former church, that I would try to see what Quaker meeting is like, and it felt good. I liked the silence very much.
How many years have you been here?
Many. You know, often, well, I mean, there were some absences, but say 30 years. Yeah, sometime in the early 90s, late 80s. I'm not sure which anymore.
What does peace mean to you?
What does peace mean to me? Well, on different levels, it means different things. I think you need to include justice with the term peace, peace with justice. And justice means fairness, basically. You know, everybody being treated equal. And then Cornel West came up with the thought that, how did that go? Justice is what love looks like in public. And that's an interesting thought, which I quite like. Peace and justice on a certain level are an expression of love people have for each other and their communities. And it could be easily extended to and ought to be the environment and animals and plants, etc.
What made you decide to start working for peace?
At one point, what I remember is somebody gave me a peace pilgrim pamphlet, and she was a woman who worked for peace, and there was a book, and then I read her book, and I realized that from reading her book, it was a very transformative experience, and I realized there was a great deal of truth in that we should all be working for peace and trying to help each other. I mean, life in a way is like driving, oddly enough. If you're a safe and responsible driver, you realize it's a cooperative effort and not a competition.
Mm.
So you want to help everybody get home safely. Mm. And the same is true of life. You want to help everybody get home safely. And this whole idea of competition in all aspects of life is not good. I mean, we need to consider cooperation and affirming each other. I mean, one question that I mean I wouldn't mind addressing is how to get more young people involved. You know, understanding that we can't solve our problems with violence.
How do you think we can get more young people involved, Nico?
Maybe show them the lead of peace. Show them how to do peace, like by using kind words to them or helping them.
That would certainly help. Yeah. Well, a lot of children really are abused in many ways, and our public education, unfortunately, allows the military in the schools, and our history militarizes children. I mean, we could have timelines based on art or music or dance or unionizing and people affirming their rights in a variety of different ways. Have a timeline on women's rights or many, but we have a historical timeline based on war, and that has to stop. It militarizes people. It teaches them war is important and nothing else happened in between. And everything else that happens in between, having A good time with your family and having a picnic in the backyard is so far superior to war. Everything about war in the media is glamorized, and it's horrible in real life, and the exact opposite is true. You know, actually helping people and serving them in different meaningful ways is really a great experience and made to look very uninteresting and dull. So we need to change the way we present wonderful things and very negative things. And war is very awful.
Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Nikolai Nagel-Trebby and Joanna Nagel-Trebby.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st Congressional Districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
WRGB in Albany reports that Representative Paul Tonko held a listening session April 29th in the town of Milton in Saratoga County. Tonko wanted to hear residents' opinions on the new farm bill that is being negotiated this year. But the story does not quote any residents or their opinions, only Tonko. The 20th Congressional District Representative said, and I quote, "Food insecurity, the need to have food on the table, the importances of nutrition for our senior community and for sound development for our young people. So we need to emphasize this, especially because there were proposed restrictions and rollbacks in the bill recently done on the House floor in Washington. So it just alerts me to the wrongdoing in that bill and how it relates to agriculture and nutrition," end quote. Read more about this story at the WRGB website.
On April 27th, Democrat Pat Ryan voted with local Republicans Mark Molinaro and Elise Stefanik against, quote, "directing the president to remove all United States armed forces other than the United States armed forces assigned to protect the United States embassy from Somalia," unquote. Democrat Paul Tonko voted for the measure, which failed 102-321 in the House of Representatives. It was a rare bipartisan vote in Congress, with 52 Republicans and 50 Democrats voting for the measure, and 165 Republicans and 156 Democrats voting against.
Nancy Kern reports in Columbia Green Media that Representative Mark Molinaro, a Republican from Dutchess County, on April 29th voted against a bill to end a two-year moratorium on duties placed on imported cells and modules used on solar farms. Most Republicans voted for the bill, but it will not pass the Democrat-controlled Senate nor be signed by President Joe Biden. And it passed 221-202, which means Molinaro breaking with his party did not jeopardize the bill passing in the House of Representatives. Even though the vote was mostly theater, Molinaro said, and I quote, "Repealing this moratorium could force domestic companies, including those in New York's 19th congressional district, to pay over $1 billion in retroactive duties, eliminate thousands of domestic jobs, and cancel planned solar projects. I broke with my own party and voted against today's legislation because it would kneecap our advances in domestic solar energy and eliminate jobs in upstate New York," end quote. Judging from comments included in the story, Molinaro's vote won't be popular with local Republicans who seem opposed to solar power. Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger, a Republican, said, and I quote, "I do not agree that it's used as a utility scale. I don't think that's the optimal use for solar," end quote. Athens Sound Supervisor Michael Perrone said, and I quote, "I don't think I agree entirely with Molinaro because there may be a pilot involved with the project, which means that on a town level, the town does not get full taxation," end quote. Republican County Legislator Thomas Hobart from Coxsackie said, and I quote, "I don't see the residents of the region benefiting from the power that would be generated and would only experience the loss of open space," end quote. Molinaro represents the 19th Congressional District, though he lives in the 18th Congressional District. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. The Troy Record reports that Representative Paul Tonko introduced the New York-New Jersey Watershed Protection Act with New York Republican Representative Nicole Malliotakis to protect the Hudson, Mohawk, and Raritan Rivers and their tributaries. In the Senate, all four New York and New Jersey senators